The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the content providers and should not be viewed as an endorsement of any product or service. Nor does it reflect the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome again. My name is Doug Powell. I'm the president of the AAVL, Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss. And this, I always forget what the real title of this is, but it's making final arrangements. And we have Chris Prentice, and we have Rose Walker. That's right, Rose Walker, who are going to help us walk through our preparations to make it easier for ourselves and for our families. So, Danette, do you have anything? Danette's going to have one of the mics because she's got the questions. And Danette Dixon is my faithful sidekick, who's the chair of the Events and Convention Committee, and has done a bang-up job with monthly calls all through the year and this session, and maybe even one more, right, at the convention?
Huh?
Do we have another session that we're co-hosting?
No.
Okay, not this time. All right. Anyway, so I'm handing Danette one of the microphones. And take it away, Danette.
All righty. Oh, yeah.
Zoom, are you here? Are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay, do you want to give the code?
The code for right now is, beginning in code is 89221. That is 89221.
Perfect. Thank you, Angela. So, first, I want to start off by Chris Prentice introducing himself. He is an assistant district attorney in Loveland, Texas. Go ahead, Chris.
All right, thank you. That is Loveland. It's one word, but it's those two words just shoved together. I've been an attorney for 37 years in Texas. And I've done a lot of different things as an attorney, and I spent several years in private practice, and I did a lot of estate planning, will preparation, and other things that you would do in anticipation of your making your final arrangements. And I look forward to answering your questions and providing as much helpful information as I can.
All right. Thank you, Chris. I had the pleasure of meeting him today, but visiting with him on the phone a few times. And is it Rose Walker? Do you want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yes, my name is Rose Walker. I'm a licensed funeral director and embalmer here in Jacksonville, Florida. I've been licensed as a funeral director and embalmer for over 20 years. I am 25 years into the industry, 2 years recently owning my own firm along with my sister Carla Berry, who's not with us on today. But as stated, I've been in the industry for quite some years now, and I'm here to try to provide you with a little information regarding planning, pre-planning or pre-purchasing funeral plans that will aid your family in setting your funeral arrangements and things that you would want to be a part of during this time, and that they won't have to be burdened with at that time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Last one to let you down.
Oh, geez. I was dying to hear that.
Chris said it.
So is Rose sitting next to Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. So we're going to go with the first question, and these are questions that the members asked. It's the introductory questions. I have to say that slow. So, just a sec. Oh, no. Hang tight. Just a second. That's the wrong one.
Wrong file.
It's wrong one.
We can't answer questions on hotel orientation.
I know. Okay. Okay. Okay.
tell a little bit about yourself and what you
do. Oh, yeah.
Closing statement
at the end.
Right?
No.
At the end. Closing statement.
Okay.
One. Introduction. What is an advanced medical diagnosis?
Okay. First question for both of you, probably. What is an advanced medical directive?
Okay, an advanced medical directive, they have like three or four different names. There's different forms depending on where you are. There's one, and I'll primarily talk about what I'm most familiar with, which is what we have in Texas. They may be called different things. You may hear things called a living will. In Texas, it's actually called a directive to physicians, family, or surrogates. And basically what that document is, you can set up, if you want extraordinary means to be taken to preserve your life, let's say you've had a major stroke and they've said, okay, you've got major organ damage, this is not working, that's not working, we can take extraordinary efforts to extend your life, or we can make you comfortable, or we can just, however you want to do. You have choices in the document. The way it's set up in Texas, that is a document that has to be witnessed by two independent people that are not related to you and not in the healthcare profession, and the signatures need to be notarized to verify signatures. And if you do not want any extraordinary means to be taken to preserve or prolong your life, you can make those choices. If you do want that, you can also choose that, and that's your choice. Now, the other one that kind of goes along with this is usually available from your healthcare provider is a DNR order, a do not resuscitate order. And basically what that is if your heart stops beating and you're in the hospital and you've given a DNR, they will not do CPR. And one of the things to consider with CPR is those that are brought back, a lot of times they don't have a quality of life, and it may just extend life a few more hours or a few more days. The other thing is if you're old and brittle or young and brittle, they're going to break bones when they do that because the chest compressions are so intense. So those are things to consider with those. There are do not resuscitate orders available in every state, and the language in those is required to be universal, so there's no misconstruing them between states. Like if you were in the hospital in Florida, but you live in California or Washington or somewhere else, and you have an incident here, they can contact, your family can contact the your healthcare provider in your hometown, and they can submit that to the medical providers here that are providing treatment. So it's the same language. If there's not one in place, and if there's not a directive to physicians or living will in place, then doctors are going to take every means to prolong life as long as they can. And they're not going to, if you say let grandpa die, they're not going to listen. They're going to do everything within their power to keep someone alive. So it's if you don't want that to happen to you, then you need to have one of those in place. And those are things that you would most likely need to consult a local legal professional. A lot of times if expenses is a problem, legal aid societies and other places like that will provide those to help you prepare those at no charge or at a very nominal charge.
Thank you. Rose, do you have anything to add?
No, that's going to be Chris's field.
Okay.
Can I just add one thing?
What? Do you need to let this mic?
Oh. I got it. No, I got it. Thank you. My big thing, I read a book by, I've forgotten his first name, Gawande is his last name, called Being Mortal. And it's an excellent book talking about some of these issues surrounding you know, the end of life. And one of the things that he stresses is finding, you know, telling your family members, or, you know, in their case, you know, finding out from them, what is the minimum quality of life that you expect, you know, that you would want to stay alive for? And if something happens that you can't get back to that quality of life, then, you know, pull the plugs, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. But, you know, and it's a hard conversation to have, but it's really a useful conversation, because then you find out what's really important to the people, you know, to the people around you, and how these documents can actually work for them and for you. Yeah. It helps you make the decision on whether to pull the plug or not, right?
And I've got one other thing to add. And one other document that comes in handy in these circumstances is you can do, and a lot of times this is a separate document from your regular power of attorney, but there's a durable power of attorney for healthcare, where you've designated someone of your choice to make healthcare decisions if you're unconscious or in a coma or delirious or unable to make your wishes known. Now, those are important. But the thing to remember is you need to make sure that if you have one of those and you designate a certain person to make those decisions for you, that they're going to make the decision you want them to make. That's why this conversation that Doug talks about is important. They, you know, well, I'm not going to let Daddy die. I'm going to keep, even if they got to run electricity through him, I'm not going to let him die. So you need to make sure that they know what you want. If they know that, if you've said, look, if they're keeping me alive with machines and I can't stay alive for more, you know, a day or two to check and see if my body will kick in and do what it needs to, that's one thing. But don't just keep me around lingering for 2 months on machines when the doctors have said, look, there's very little brain activity. Now, some would argue that's already happened, but, you know, that's a different story. But if it's down to that, then you've told your loved ones, look, I've got that directive. I've given you power to make that decision. Please don't let me just linger around here. I mean, what's to come in the next life is better than this one anyway. So when it's time to go, let me go. So that's the other important thing that I would add to that.
So something to add to, leading to the next question is, how do you...
I will add something to that. And I did say, I'm sorry. I will say, I did say that Chris was better served to answer that question. However, from the legal standpoint, yes. But as a funeral director, I have had, as a funeral director and as a mother, I've had that conversation with my children, because I've said to them, hey, listen, if something happens to me and I'm you're faced with the question, okay, mom's on life support. I say to them, I'm like, okay, we're going to have this discussion, and they don't want to hear it, but listen, give me 2 or 3 days on life support. And if at some point the doctor says, hey, you know, like Chris was saying, she has little to no brain activity, what have you, and, you know, it's irreversible, what have you, what quality of life am I going to have? And I'm like, you know, let me go. If, you know, by chance it's, you know, I'm going to live, if it's the will for me to live, I'll live if you take me off of life support. If it's my time to go, I'm going to go. Now, from a funeral director and embalmer standpoint, if it's one of those things where I've expressed I want to be viewed for a funeral service, if I'm going to be viewed a lot of times with life support, and I'm not just saying leave me, let me take me off of life support because I want to be viewed, but it's problematic for an embalmer, because life support tends to cause a person to swell, meaning you're retaining fluid. So it's very problematic for an embalmer to reverse what has happened. On occasion, we can do that. We can make the swelling go down. We can make it presentable for a family. Sometimes it's very, very important for that last parting view for a family. And if an embalmer can't do that, it's very disappointing to that family that we can't give them that last parting view. And there are times we have to tell a family, listen, we'll do what we can to make that possible, but we're morticians, as some folks say, we're not magicians. So we do what we can, but we want, if I have a family come and sit down with me and say, hey,
my mom or dad's on life support, and I'm going to ask that question, well, how long have they been on life support? I don't want to tell you to go take them off because we may or may not be able to make this happen for you, but I'm going to let you know in reality, this is what may or may not happen. You know, I want you to, you know, have a conversation, but, you know, I have to be realistic with you. I want to let you know. But, you know, I'm just adding this because these are some of the things that you might want to think about when you're, you know, having that discussion about are you going to keep them on life support. And I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying take your loved one off because you want to view them and they may swell or what have you, or have a retention of edema, which is fluid. But these are things that you want to think about. You know, the other individuals here have given you a lot to think about when you're talking about life support, artificial means of keeping individuals alive in the end. These are things that we don't want to talk about, but you, the necessity of them or the reality of having these conversations with your family, they're very, very important. These are taboo conversations, but they're necessary. So that's just something I wanted to add, because I've had them with my boys, and they're young adults, and they don't want to talk about that. But I'm like, hey, sit down and listen to me. I mean what I say. If give me 2 or 3 days on there, and if they're saying, hey, this is not irreversible, you know, guys, you know, let me go. Don't just have me lingering around, you know. But anyway, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you might have just answered the next questions or led into the next question. It is, come on.
How can you get prepared and have those
conversations? How can you get prepared and have those hard conversations with friends and family?
Well, the easiest way to be prepared for that is you've got to think about your mortality, because I don't care how great of a person you are, your time here is temporary. It's going to end. And I've had a lot of people that don't want to come in and talk about drafting a will. Well, I don't want to think about dying. Well, I'll tell you what, you don't have to think about it, but I can guarantee you it's going to happen, because this happened to everybody else. So, you know, not many of us get to leave in a fiery chariot like Elijah. So the rest of us are going to stop breathing, and we're going to be gone from this earth. And so it's one of those things. It is hard to talk about, but it's something you need to face. And guess what? We're guaranteed right now. That's it. You know, some of us may not be here tomorrow, and there's no guarantees. And so the more you prepare today, the easier it'll be tomorrow. And Rose will talk about that more, but the pre-planning for all that stuff, the less stress you put on your family. They say, well, I don't want to talk about it. Say, okay, I'm not asking you what you want to do. I'm telling you what we need to do. And the older we get, guess what? The closer to the end we are. And, you know, you may live to be 98 years old, but you've got to, it's something to be done. My mom just prepaid her funeral last year, and she was delaying, but then she said, I need to get this done. And her husband, who's almost as old as she is, not my dad, by the way, he didn't want to do it. I don't want to spend that kind of money. So, it's going to get more. It's not going to get less. But that's the whole thing. You've got to sit. You've got to be ready to talk about it before you can expect your children or your family, whoever that happens to be. You've got to be ready to talk about it. And it's good to sit down and write down your thoughts as to what you want before you have that conversation, because it's emotional. Because nobody wants to think about dying, but it's going to happen. And it could happen next week. It could happen 20 years from now. We don't know. And so the sooner you have that, the sooner you have everything in place. It you've got a peace once all this stuff is taken care of. And as the questions come, and if we have some time at the end, I'll talk about the other things that you need to do to make sure you're ready for the rest of this. So.
Bless you. Rose, do you have anything to add?
Not this time.
Okay. Just a second. I'll play. Yep. How would you adequately plan for your wishes?
Okay, the best thing to do is to do what's called an estate plan. And if you say, well, I don't own an estate, guess what? Anything you own is part of your estate. There's personal estate and there's real estate. So, and the best way to prepare is to sit down and think about where, if you have desires of where you want your things to go or how you want your things to be taken care of, then it's good to sit down and put that together and write it down. If you own property, you can either will it upon your death to whoever you want it to go to, or you can do in most every state, you can do what's called a death on transfer or a life estate deed, where it automatically passes to who you want it to go to upon your death. You maintain all the ownership and control of it as long as you're alive, but once you die, then it automatically passes to whoever you've assigned it to or sold it to or given it to. Actually, if one of the things that happens nowadays, and life expectancy in the United States is about 79 years, give or take, on average. A lot of times we don't just die. We get sick and we end up in facilities or with family or whatever. And so it's important to take care of those things as well. You should have a statutory power of attorney that gives someone the authority to take care of your business, take care of anything with the IRS or Social Security or banks or any other business type transaction. And then you should have one for your medical care, and those documents are available. They're fairly standard and fairly inexpensive to do. You can also declare, if there's a document called the Declaration of Guardian, if you are concerned at some point that you might get to the point where you can't take care of any of your business, but you're not anywhere close to dying, but you want to have someone you can trust to be your guardian to make those statements. And you may have a rogue child that is, you may have several very nice children, but you may have a rogue child that may want to take control, but you don't want them to take control of you because you think they'll dump you somewhere and forget about you. So you can designate and declare who you want your guardian to be if that ever becomes a necessity. It doesn't mean that they're automatically going to be it, but it basically says, in the event that I'm determined to be incompetent or incapacitated to the point where I need someone to take care of me, I designate this person. You can also say in there, under no circumstances shall this person be designated as my guardian. So you can control that in advance. Now, once that time comes, once you've been declared incapacitated, you don't have that control anymore. So that's something you can take care of in advance. That's a legal document. You would need to consult an attorney for that. And if finances are a problem, check with the legal aid provider in your community. But that's another important document to take care of. You've got the directive to physicians that we've talked about. And, of course, a last will and testament is important. If you have anything of any value that you want to pass along to certain people, if you want to make sure that this person, this grandchild or this person gets this, or if you want to give money to ACB or somebody else, if some charity, that's only going to happen if you put it in your will. And a will, if you drafted one, if you had one done 30 years ago, it's probably time to update that. It's good to update those about every 3 to 5 years, just in case things change. But you can designate it in a will. If you want to put things in a trust, you can send it from your estate directly into a trust through your will. You can leave your keepsake jewelry to your favorite daughter or granddaughter. You can leave money to whoever you want to. Because if you don't have a will, regardless of the state where you live, if you don't have a will, where your stuff goes is controlled by the laws of intestacy. If you die without a will, you're called intestate. That sounds painful, but that's that's what it is. And it can be painful because...
I had mine worked on last
year. Yeah. He had intestate problems. But you can take care of that by having a will. And wills can be very simple. You can just say, I leave everything to my to my spouse. I leave everything to my children. If something happens to one of them, then it goes to their children. I mean, it's very easy to do. They're not complicated. But once again, that's something, don't get a do-it-yourself will kit at the Office Depot. That would be like going in there and getting a do-it-yourself appendectomy kit. So do not do that. Most attorneys will work with you. Wills are not that expensive to do in most cases unless you go to Johnny Shyster down the street that charges $8,000 for everything he does. But wills are not typically expensive to do. Most states, probating a will upon death is not terribly expensive, but it's not something you'll be paying for because you'll be gone. Now, the other thing about a will is just a piece of paper until you die. You know, so you could change it once every 6 weeks if you wanted to. I had a client several years ago. We were working. It was a will contest, and it was an older lady, and she had no children, but she had a lot of nieces and nephews. And every time one of the nieces or nephews made her mad, she came and changed her will.
Well, I'll show you. You're out of the will, you know. And so when she finally passed away, you know, one of the ones that had made her mad that was no longer in the will filed a will contest. They wanted to fight it. Well, that's an uphill battle. We ended up getting it settled, but she had like 10 or 12 wills, and they were all done within like a 3-year period. So don't be mean to Aunt Edna, you know.
Well, you're out of the will now. That's all for you.
But it's important to have one of those because you don't know. And if there's certain things you want to go to certain people, that is the only way that happens unless you give it to them before you die. And guess what? You probably don't know when you're going to die. Just saying. You may know, but most of us don't. So it's important for everyone to have a will, no matter how simple it is or how much you have or how little you have. If you want things to go the way you want them to go, then you have to control it while you're still here. Because once you're gone, you can't come back from the grave. No, you weren't supposed to get that. That haunting doesn't work too well. So it's important to take care of these things before you go. And that's the other part of being prepared. You've got to think about these things. You've got to accept your own mortality. You don't have to dwell on it. Well, I'm dying sometime. Okay, good. So is everybody else. But don't dwell on it all the time. But it is something you need to dwell on long enough to take care of your business.
We'll take questions when we're towards the end. Can we do that?
Okay. I've seen people fight over, when I say little or nothing, to nothing. I mean to nothing. So when Chris says a will can be as simple, I mean it can be just something really, really simple. People fight over things that you think they would never fight over. So I don't care what you have in your house that might look like just clothing you would never think somebody would be mad about. You see families, I always say families can either grow closer together or they'll fall further apart. So it is just best if you just make out a list of what you have and what you think somebody might want or might not want. Just make that list, because some things, just the simplest of things, will cause these families to just go so haywire. And another thing, and we may talk a little more about this a little bit later, but be careful of who you leave over your things as well, because I see that more and more commonly being a fight, because individuals that you think might distribute things, because sometimes if it's not in writing, it's almost like it just never happened. You might think that maybe you know your oldest child or whatever, and you'll leave your oldest child to say, hey, do this. Or I feel like they'll make sure that everything is taken care of. If it's not in writing and that oldest child is saying, hey, mom thought I would do it, but no, you know, things could change and that oldest child may not do what mom thought she would do. And it's just things just get all out of order, what have you. She might take the money and run. And then those younger siblings or children are just left out in the wind. So it's just better to have it in writing. I don't mean to sound ugly or what have you, but a dead person can't speak.
So whatever has been said or done, if it's not written down, it's like it was never done. So it's just best to do a will. It doesn't take much to do one. We just can't stress that enough. You know, we will say things or what have you, but if it's not there, it's like it never happens. I see it all so much, and it just happens all the time. And when it's just simple enough to just take the time, and it doesn't even take that long to do it. But again, whatever you have that you might even think that's not of value will end up being a fight once you close your eyes. Yeah. So it's just easier to just do a will.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. How can a person without any family access the power of attorney to do an advance directive?
You don't need a, well, you've got to have, there's got to be some family, but those are things to talk about with an attorney. And if you have difficulty affording that, some firms do that pro bono, but there are legal aid and legal services that are provided for people with limited means. But it's important to reach out, because those services are fairly easily available in most places.
Okay. According to the book Growing Older, there are several different ways in honoring a body. Yep. What are they? Several the ways to honor a body.
Honor a body.
Yeah. So there are different ways.
This was okay. Doug's question.
Here's the way I would answer that question. One of the things. And I'll let the funeral director do this next, because she deals with a lot more dead bodies than I do. hopefully. One of the things that you can do, and I have done this, it's on my Department of Public Safety ID card that's not a driver's license, you can rest assured, I'm donating my usable organs to science. If they want them, they can have them, because I'll be through with them before they can have them. That's one thing you can do. You can donate your whole body to a university for experimentation or whatever, or you can tell them, get this to the funeral home in a hurry so they can take care of it before somebody else does. Personally, I do not want a viewing of my body after I'm gone. I do not want it. It bothers me for people to walk by and say, and this is no reflection on you, Rose, because I'm sure y'all do a great job with Aunt Helen, but I'm not walking by and say, oh, she looks so peaceful. I mean, it's just, and then you've got, every once in a while, you've got a family member that tries to crawl in the casket. I can't live without Helen. I just want a big picture of me there, and somebody wants to throw darts, that's fine. I just don't think that's cool to walk by and look in at a dead person. I'm sorry. I mean, they're gone. I mean, if they sit up, then they weren't supposed to be there. So.
And Chris, you know, everyone has their own ideas or their own thoughts about how they want to be honored. And again, that's where we talk about pre-planning and having the opportunity to share in those thoughts while you're living. And don't, you know, leave that to your family to have to make those decisions for you. So therefore, that's why pre-planning is important, if you feel that you want to have that opportunity to make those, share those ideas with your family. If you don't make or take the time to do that while you're alive, of course you don't have a choice in the matter. Your family's going to do what they want to do. So as far as honoring, I don't know, that's kind of a broad question, because I'm not certain as to what type answer they're looking for, but honoring could mean many different things, because you know, you have people, of course, with different religions, different choices as to how they want their funeral services to be carried out. Just as Chris just stated, he doesn't want a viewing. There are some people that's very important. Yes, I want a viewing. There are some individuals.
Yeah, I brought it up because in this book that I read recently, they had one way of doing it is to leave the body in the open and let the creatures come and you know, go back to nature. Others you know, have given their bodies for human composting. I mean, I never heard of this stuff before, right? But there are different ways of honoring, you know, honoring the dead and the bodies that they inhabited. So I just threw that out there, and I didn't know if Rose had anything about, you know, if she provides different kinds of services in that regard.
They don't have a buzzard. They don't have a buzzard perch out there.
So there are several laws that provide for different ways that we can honor dead human dead bodies. There are some things that are called, well, we have something now that's called green burials, and that is an option where the individual passes away. There's no embalming. There's pretty much nothing that we do to the remains. The person is just basically goes back to the earth. So they're taken to a cemetery that will allow the person, the individual, just to be placed in a grave and just, you know, pretty much dressed in something that's biodegradable and can be placed in the...
No coffin or anything?
No coffin or anything. And they pretty much just go back to the earth. You have the options. They have another option, and I don't want to give you the wrong name because I have not done it. They have a crematory. I can't remember the name, so I don't want to give you the wrong name, but there's something that can be done at the crematory. I think it's some type of hydrolysis that they can do, water hydrolysis. And I could have the wrong name, but if something similar to that they can do versus the other type of cremation where the individual is placed in what's called a retort and what some know as burning, which some individuals will call it, but it's done by intense heat. It's not a fire, which some people think is done. That's cremation as most know it as. So we have ground burials that a lot of people are familiar with. So you have the ground burial versus the cremation. Of course, cremation has come into play a lot more over the years as we knew it. At one point, ground burials was more common. But now we probably have cremation is more of the high end of the 50 percentile now than ground burial. So people are choosing different options now. And like I said, sometimes now it's because of religious purposes. And sometimes it's just a person's option as to what they want to do. And again, it can be personal preference of the deceased prior to, they'll state their option prior to death, or it can be the family's choice. It can be economical reasons. There are several different reasons why people choose how they're to be honored at their time of passing. So I think, does that kind of answer your question?
Yes.
A little bit?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. How do you evaluate the cost of a funeral home? Do you make a down payment? Do you make payments each month? How do you evaluate the cost of a funeral home?
Okay, so I did kind of read up on some of the questions. So I think one of them was evaluate, how do individuals evaluate funeral homes? A lot of times funeral homes are selected based on prior service. So a lot of our families that come to our funeral home is prior business. The families have kind of have a rapport with us because we've served their families before. Families or friends or what have you. You know, a lot of times is we serve this family for down through the years or what have you. Or somebody knows me. Maybe it's someone that's going to church with me. It could just be referrals or what have you. Sometimes it's demographics. A friend of a friend, a family member of a family member. It's just a lot of times it's referrals, though. Now we have Google. A lot of people are, you know, a lot of people go by the Google rates or what have you. They are not always the best to look. You know, sometimes somebody gets mad or whatever. They may give you a bad rating just because. And it's not always because of something that the funeral home has done. It's just because somebody just got mad. You know, they're not always the best choices to look for. But Google has been one of the things that people are looking at. There are different reasons why people evaluate the funeral homes. Prices, I kind of looked that up a little bit. I noticed that the NFDA, the average funeral in 2023, they said it was $8,300. That cannot include the cemetery because cemeteries are selected, again, different reasons why people select cemeteries. It might be because a loved one is buried there already. It could be because of demographics. It's kind of the same reasons for selecting a funeral home. So the prices can vary based on what a family would like to have or take place during that funeral. It might be a casket that's selected. You know, caskets these days, people can purchase a casket from the funeral home. They can go online and select it from a casket store. You can buy a casket from Walmart or Costco these days. So there are, yeah, so a casket, I mean, a cost.
Probably buy one on Amazon.
You know, you're right. So
well, you want to try it on first to make sure it fits.
Now, what you don't want to happen is you go online and buy a casket, and you get to us, and the body size might not be right for that casket. So you kind of got to do your homework. These are things that you want to know before you go out and buy a casket. So, Chris, you're absolutely right. I know we're laughing about it, but, you know, that...
Got to be big enough.
It has to be big enough, yes. So the prices can vary. I know we're looking at the fact that sometimes we can go online and look at different averages, and it's not always going to be quite effective. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the right price. The national average for cremations a direct cremation may range from about $1,000 and up. And it depends on the funeral home a lot of times. And the funeral homes, some of the funeral homes have a crematory on site. Some of us, like, I don't have a crematory, so I have a contract with a crematory, and we, you know, use that crematory, so we'll offer cremation service. But, of course, we have to go to a crematory to actually perform that cremation process. Was that part of the question?
That's great. Thank you, Rose. So if you want to donate your money to some nonprofits like ACB or Guide Dogs or something, how do you make sure that that's going to happen?
Have a will. If you don't have a will, you can tell your children all day long, listen, Junior, I want you to give $2,000 to ACB. And they're like, heck, I will. I was going to buy me a new car. That's a good down payment. So, no, that's the only way you can do it. Because otherwise, well, there's one other way you could do it. You could set up a bank account and maintain an amount of money in there and have it pay on death to ACB. But that's a little complicated, and the bank would look at you funny. It's best to just have that in a will. And make sure this is one of those conversations you have with your kids. Look, I'll tell you now, this is in the will. I'm not going to tell you what else is in the will, but I can tell you now, I'm leaving money to ACB. I'm leaving it to Guide Dog Users or whoever. But if it's not in the will, there's no way to enforce it. And family can say, we're not giving that kind of money. So that's the only way you can make sure it happens, unless you give it before you die. Okay, and a will is not, it's just a piece of paper unless it's filed for probate. And there's two different types of, well, there's many ways to probate a will, but there's, depending on what state you're in, some have independent administration where the executor that you've named in your will, they file it for probate, they get admitted to probate by the judge, and then they basically follow through with the instructions that are in your will. Some states, it's what's called dependent administration, and where every step that's taken in that probate process has to be approved by a judge. And that varies from state to state. So if you're in a state with requires a dependent administration, I'd recommend that you move to Texas. So,
another way to leave assets to an organization would be if you have a life insurance policy, you could designate that nonprofit as a beneficiary. So you could do that as well.
Okay.
Medical privacy versus advocacy and privacy versus responsibility.
Is there a question there?
What's the question? I missed part of it.
That's another document I didn't talk about. There's another document that you can have executed called a HIPAA release. Everybody's familiar with what HIPAA is. You start asking questions about somebody else, can't tell you. HIPAA says I can't tell you anything about your mom, your dad, you know, anybody without a HIPAA release signed. You can execute a document that gives, and you can name in there who you want to have the ability to talk to your doctors. If you sign a HIPAA release that you authorize your children or your grandchild or your brother or sister, whoever it happens to be, the doctors can then freely share with them any diagnosis or any treatment or anything because they're not going to violate HIPAA because it's a federal law and they don't want to get in trouble. So if you don't have that, then they're not going to talk to your family unless, as at least in anything specific. They'll speak in generalities, but they will not really give much information about your situation unless you're sitting there and you know what's going on. HIPAA's absolute medical privacy, and doctors and nurses, you can ask them questions. They won't tell you anything because they don't want to violate HIPAA because problems for their career. So that's how you get around that. And that's my understanding of that. I didn't hear a question in there, but that's...
You should probably carry a copy of that too, right?
Well, you can put those things. You can put those things in your medical. You can leave them in your chart with your doctor and with the hospital that you use.
Right, but how about referrals?
If they get a referral, I would take a copy if you go to a new doctor. Yep. Just take your medical power of attorney, your HIPAA release. You can let them know that you've signed a DNR. And you can also take a copy of your directive to physicians or living will, mm-hmm. so they know. So.
Okay. All right. Next, what is a medical directive, and how important is it?
I think we've answered that. Okay. I think we've exhausted that question. People are not dying to hear any more about that thing. So.
So, and that's all the questions that I want to make.
I want to just kind of
go ahead, Rose.
Say something about. Yeah. I wanted to back up on one thing. We were talking about. Okay, I'm sorry. We were talking about the wills earlier, and wills are great. You got to have. You should have a will. But also, we mentioned power of attorneys, and a lot of my families kind of, for some reason, they'll have the power of attorneys in place, and then they'll misunderstand the fact that once the individual passes away, in most cases that power of attorney is no good, and they don't understand the fact that they need that will. So I think we want to make sure that you all are understanding of the fact that that will is going to need to be in place, because that power of attorney at the time the person passes away, most cases that power of attorney is no good. I think it may be some stipulation on that. Is there something you can share on that, Chris?
Power of attorney dies the minute you stop breathing. It's gone. I mean, because you have no more power to designate once you've died. That's why you need a will, because that's a document that you appoint an executor in there, and then they go and get that will admitted to probate. Then they have the power to take care of your business. Yeah, I got Uncle Herman's a power of attorney. You have Uncle Herman's been dead for 3 years. That's just a piece of paper at that point. Use it to start the fireplace.
Okay.
I'll entertain questions if there's.
That's all the questions. Do we want to check on Zoom?
Oh boy, you opened a can of worms, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, would you please?
Yeah.
Partially sighted guy here, so shout out.
Thank you, Jason.
I have a question. I see a hand. I see a hand close to me. So, but then just shout out. You'll go first.
Okay.
Where's the microphone? Right. Oh, okay. I have a question. I did a will 5 decades ago, and planning ahead. Question is, I'm sure the laws have changed a lot in 50 years. If the law changes, is my will grandfathered, or would it be ignored, or would it be upheld?
A will that was executed 50 years ago is still good. Now, there may be some things in there that it may change the way things go. Like if you said, I leave my 67 Chevy to my favorite son, and your 67 Chevy's been gone for a long time. They're not going to get the 67 Chevy because if you have specific bequests in a will and you no longer own the things that you've bequeathed to someone, they're not going to get it, and they can't say, well, she left me a car and she's now got a 2023 Cadillac Sedan DeVille. Sorry. She left you specifically a 67, and that's not there. So that's why it's good to update them, but it's not... It's not unenforceable. It is fully enforceable, even if it's 50 years old.
Okay, I'm coming your way. Hold on.
Let's do another. Let's do a Zoom question.
Oh, okay. Let's do a Zoom question first.
Angela, any questions on Zoom?
You gotta say it on the mic.
Yeah, on the mic.
Yes, we.
Any questions on Zoom?
Yes, there's Juliana Bell Mills here on Zoom.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Can you have your power of attorney? Can that person be your executor?
Yes, but they won't be the two things at the same time.
No, but I mean.
Yes, you could. The person you give power of attorney to while you're alive can be named as your executor in your will, and they could take that up after you've passed away.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I have a question.
Sure.
Okay. Is it possible to use life insurance toward funeral expenses?
Yes, it is. And that's, in most cases, that's what most individuals will use if they, of course, don't have the, and I shouldn't say that, but in most cases, yes, that's what individuals use. Okay. As long as this in force.
I'm coming back.
Yeah. You want a good policy?
Yeah. Over 2 years old.
I have a question and a comment. As important as it is for doing all of this legal stuff and planning for the of how your casket fits, if you have a worship tradition that you belong to and that you want to be have a service from that religious institution, visit with your rabbi, your pastor, your priest, whatever. Have the conversation about what you want for your funeral with them as well, because it can save many, many family fights after you're dead and gone. The question I have, could you speak to the difference between a living trust and a will?
Yes, okay. There's two types of trusts. There is a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust. A revocable trust, you put things in trust, and if it's a revocable, you can remain in charge of that trust for the remainder of your lifetime, and then it stays in the trust. Once you pass away, it would go on to your either to your successor trustee or to the beneficiaries that you've named in your trust. Now, there are groups that go around telling people that it's cheaper to have a trust than it is to do probate. Now, that's one of those questions that's different from state to state. you need to be careful because some of those people are just trying to sell you a bill of goods and charge you $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 for something that you don't need to spend that kind of money for. A trust basically, if you put things in a trust, it's no longer in your personal name. I mean, you could put your, you own your house, you can deed your house to your revocable trust, and then the trust owns it. You may lose some of the benefits of being the homeowner. You may lose some, depending on your state and the way state law works in your state, you may lose some homestead exemptions. You may lose some other exemptions. If it's in an, if you put things into an irrevocable trust, once it's in the trust, you have absolutely zero control, and it's not counted as your stuff, but it's gone. It's there. You can add to it. You can put more things in it, but once things go into an irrevocable trust, what's there is there, and it's going to be handled by the trustee that's named. You will not. You cannot be the trustee of an irrevocable trust. Only it, when you set that up, it is, once it's in there, the trustee that you've named has control of it. So if you want to maintain some control and you think a trust is the best way to go, make sure you do a revocable trust, which means you can revoke it if you choose. You remain in control of that property until your death or until some other instance that occurs that's set out in that trust. Those are things to take very... You want to think about that long and hard before you put all your stuff in a trust, because it may have some advantages for you, but it may be very disadvantageous for you, and it all depends on your circumstances and what you have. But in most cases, most people do not need a trust. Now, if you've got children or grandchildren with special needs or different things like that, where other things could come into play, that's a different story, but that's something to sit down and talk about. One of the other things that's available to us as people who are blind or visually impaired, if your impairment hit before the age of, I think it's 26, different each state's, you might be able to take advantage of an ABLE account. And I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about that for a long period of time. Go talk to somebody else, because it's kind of complicated, and they're set up differently in every state. But every state, I think, has one now, and ABLE stands for Achieve a Better Life Experience, and that may be a way to get some tax-free money into your investments and things like that. But I am not going to give you any advice about that other than tell you that they're out there. That's another avenue of places to put your money.
Let's check with Zoom. Angela, anybody?
Zoom question. Is there a Zoom question?
Yes. Yes, we have Zoom. Diane Scalzi.
Hey, Diane.
Okay. First of all, I turn my speech off. Okay, we've had a will for several years ago, so I can definitely tell you that my husband has determined who is going to get his Kareem Abdul-Jabbar autographed basketball. So the question I have actually is concerning the Advanced Medical Directive. I'm wondering about, can you put in there to get a second opinion? Because I was aware of a situation a few years ago where someone that we knew had an accident, and she went to a hospital in a small town, and they were telling her daughter that, you know, she didn't have much chance of surviving and all that. So her daughter had her transferred to a hospital down here where I live, and we have several large healthcare systems here. And, you know, not only is she still alive, but she got out of the hospital and, you know, she's still working. She didn't get out unscathed. She wasn't exactly the same way she was when she, you know, before she had her accident. But, you know, can you put something in there that maybe if you don't like what they tell you, that whatever hospital you're in, that you can get another opinion?
Yes, you can. And if you've given your next of kin or person that you trust a medical power of attorney where they can make that decision. They can say, look, we want a second opinion. We're not going to stick with this opinion in at the Podunk General Hospital. We would like to go to a larger healthcare system to make sure that's all that's available.
I have a question over here. This lady's relating.
Hi, one of the things that I've been researching and that my son told me about is an aquamation instead of a cremation, and that sounds a lot better than cremation. Has anybody heard of that? And I have heard of the composting as well in Olympia, so just wanted to let people know.
I believe it's actually called water hydrolysis. So you have the water hydrolysis and you have the typical regular cremation. Is that what you're speaking in terms, possibly? Yeah. I apologize that I don't have a lot of information on it because I'm actually deal with most of the traditional cremation. But those are the options that you have for the cremations. I think maybe that may be what you're speaking in terms of. But traditionally right now, on average, mainly what we deal with are the traditional type cremation services, but you do have the option of the water hydrolysis. Here in Jacksonville, I don't think we have a lot. The percentage of doing the water hydrolysis is not great. I don't want to say that we don't have quite a few of them, but it is probably starting to be a little bit more common than it has been. Again, I'm not that familiar with it right now, so I don't want to speak on it, something that I'm not that familiar with, so I don't want to give you incorrect information.
Isn't there that final determination by shark where you just dump them in the Atlantic? Can you do that?
But that's not it.
Yeah, that's not it. That is not the way that works. Lynn, the other thing about it, you're not going to feel it either way. So it won't bother you once you're gone.
Doug, I don't know if you want to go back to Zoom, and I think I see a hand, but if someone has a hand up, shout it out. Or,
yeah.
Oh, I got it. Okay. Shout it out again. Sorry.
I'm here.
Okay, I'm coming.
I have 3 young children. What advice do you have having those kind of conversations with them, and what kind of planning could I do for them?
If you have 3 young children, it's important. That's the other time that it's important to have a will, because if something happens to your children while your children are young, you need to designate in a will who you want to be their trustee, their guardian, who you want to take care of them. You don't want to turn them loose with money when they're 13, 12, 5, 3 years old. So it's important to determine. That's where you have a conversation with other family members or friends. Okay, look, if something happens to both of us, this is who we want to take care of our children. We'll set up a trust for them. It's important to have. And is there anybody in here that doesn't have any life insurance at all? Okay, it's not a good idea. You should have it. At the very least, you should have enough to handle a funeral. $5,000 to $10,000. It's important, because otherwise it's going to put your family in a difficult situation. I would advise everyone to have at least $10,000 life insurance. It's not that expensive, and it's good. You can get a term policy or a whole life, but there's a lot of them. They don't even require medical checks anymore. But it's important. They'll insure you up to age 90. It makes things a lot easier for your family. But if you have small children, it's important to have life insurance for yourself to take care of the kids, because it's one thing. I know you think you're never going to die, but I promise you will. And you don't know when. And if you have small children, you need to have that thought out, who would take care. And it's a hard conversation to have with your spouse. Okay, we've got 8 small children. Who's going to take care of them? Well, our family would hate us if something happened to us and they have to raise all these kids. But it's something that you need to discuss and have set out, because it's important. Think enough of your children to think, okay, if something were to happen to me, Who would take care of my kids? Who would I want? And it may not be somebody in your family. You're like, I don't want them anywhere close to my family. You know, it may be a close friend. It may be, you know, but you need to think about that. Though it's part of that hard to think about. You don't want to think about dying, but. Well, and you can set out, you can set up in your, in a trust for your kids. Okay, I'm not going to trust them at 18. I may give them a little at 18, some at 21, some 25 or 30. You know, if you've got the way kids don't grow up nowadays, 30 might be a good number. Or you get this money if you go to college or you get a job. You're not going to live here until you're 40 years old. Please get out of my house. But you can set that up in a trust, and you can determine what age they get that. And one of the easiest ways to fund one of those, you can have what's called a testamentary trust, where you've got a life insurance policy that funds that trust, and they don't get all the money at once. If you don't want your kids to have $100,000 at one time, then you can control that in advance. Now, once you're gone, sorry, they get the money. They can do with it what they want to. But if you say you get $20,000 when you're 21, you get another 20 when you're 25, and you get the rest of it when you're 30. You can control that to whatever extent you want.
We have about 10 minutes. Is there any more questions on Zoom?
Let me add to that regarding the insurance. I'll ask it real quick. In regards to the insurance policies, I know that sometimes there are issues where it's hard for individuals to get insured. Just in case you don't have any insurance, then it is a good idea for you to have at least about $10,000. But in case you cannot get insured, then we talked about briefly the pre-planning. You also have pre-funding of insurance, for funeral services. So if you can go to a funeral home of your choice, pre-fund a funeral. And you don't have to have any questions answered. It's just prepaying for a funeral. You can select the whole funeral service. You take part in planning your funeral. And when you're done paying for it, you're done paying for it. It's $10,000 you select. Once you're done paying, you don't have to worry about that anymore. And then you don't have that burden left on your family, and especially if you have children. Once it's done, it's done.
Freezes the price, too.
Freezes the price, exactly.
Do we want to take a Zoom question? And then I think I see a hand. But is there a question on Zoom?
Abby Taylor.
Hello, everybody. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right. So my question is it possible to have a power of attorney and or guardian who lives in a different state from where you're currently living?
It is possible, but they need to understand that the actions that they take on your behalf will be governed by the state where you live, not the state where they live.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question here.
Rose, this is primarily for you, I think. In the case that you do go in and you make pre-arrangements and you pay for the whole thing in advance so nobody has to worry about it, what happens if the funeral home goes belly up?
Okay, so in the state of Florida, and it's probably prevalent in other states as well, we're governed by, each funeral home has to have what's called a certificate of authority, and I think they slightly changed the name. But what it does is it protects the consumer. If that funeral home goes out of business, our policies are, our policies are protected by, say, either a trust by the state of Florida or insurance companies. So say somebody writes a policy with me. Right now, I have it through my Great Western Insurance Company. So if something happened to my firm, the monies are safe with Great Western Insurance Company or a trust fund by the state of Florida. So it's not, the money doesn't stay with me. I may get a commission off of writing it, just like an insurance agent would. But that money for that funeral service is protected by an insurance company. Even if Great Western sold that policy to someone else, that money is not with me. So once that person passes away, I have to submit a claim to Great Western to even retrieve the funds. So the person doesn't lose their money. Now, in the past, people have lost their monies, but the states had to find something more stringent so that individuals would be safe if that happened. So your monies are safe, so it doesn't cause a problem at all if someone entrusts their monies. Okay.
Doug, I have another question right here.
No, we have 6 minutes.
Okay, no more questions. I'll give the mic back to Doug.
I've spoken.
Thanks, Jason. Did I do one?
Okay.
So first I want to thank Chris Prentice and Rose Walker. And yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And I want to know if they have any closing remarks.
Just remember, you're not dead yet, but it could happen anytime soon. Make sure you have these conversations. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of facing death, because we're all going to be there. So it's easier to do it now when you're feeling good than to worry about it at the end when you're not feeling good and you might not make as good of decisions.
As taboo as it is, as Chris has stated, the conversations are not wanted, but they're important. So do it while you have the opportunity to participate yourselves, and while it's most important. And all of us are going to leave here. We didn't come here to stay. So, you know, just do it. It's important. So, you know, do yourselves the honors along with your families.
Oh, I have one final comment, Donette. Just remember two things. One, you came into this world empty-handed and naked, and you're going to leave the world the same way. The other thing is, I've never seen a hearse with a trailer hitch pulling a U-Haul.
There you go.
All right.
Words to think about from Chris Prentice.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. Well, does Doug have anything to say?
I do. Yeah, one more thing. The other thing to think about, I mean, the other thing, there is some urgency, because we may not have all our marbles tomorrow that we have today. You know, so get this done while you know what the hell you're thinking about, you know?
It's a matter of grave importance.
A matter of grave importance. Thank you, Chris. And we'll send him back to level land. So thank you all for coming. I hope you found it useful. And the ending code?
Yeah, Angela, please.
Yes. Ending code is 22214. That is 22214.
That's almost my zip
Thank
code.
Thank you, Zoom. Thank you, Zoom and Clubhouse.
Yes, and thank you guys for joining us on Zoom and the hosts and all that good stuff. Have a wonderful convention. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Rory.